Welcome to the pixel art workshop. This is actually the fourth time I'm doing this. So I started doing this last year at the Hackover in Hannover, and as it was rather popular, I repeated it at the last year's Congress and the Gulasch Programmiernacht after that, and now I'm here again. So I'm happy so many of you wanted to come to this session and try some pixel art for yourself. I'm going to begin with about half an hour where I talk about techniques and tools and what pixel art actually is. And after that, you'll have the opportunity to try it for yourself if you want. So, my name is Blinui, and the way I came to pixel art actually was by the Ludum Dare Game Jam. Has any one of you ever participated in a game jam before? Yeah, cool. Yeah. The challenge on a game jam is to develop a game in like a weekend. So you have 2 full days to design and build a game from scratch. And Ludum Dare is like the largest international decentralized game jam in the world. And when I discovered it, that was also last year, I quickly discovered that many people stick to pixel art for doing the graphics, which has two advantages in my opinion. First, it's incredibly cute, and second, it's rather fast to develop the graphics because, the sprites are only 16 by 16 pixels, and yeah, you can develop such a character in a few minutes. And after I saw this, I thought, that's a good idea. I don't know anything about pixel art, but I want to learn it. So, the first thing I did was take the Pfaff icon of my university's homepage, which looked like you see on the left. Which is like really blurry and ugly, and there are some JPEG compression artifacts in there, which should absolutely not be the case. And I tried to improve it and build the versions on the right. And yeah, then I talked to university staff, and that took some months to set up some contracts, and I had to give them all the rights to use these graphics. And but now it's actually online, and I'm glad that it looks better in my browser tab. And yeah, I continue doing pixel art in the 16 by 16 pixel size, which takes about 10 minutes to do one. And I'll just give you some examples of what pixel art can look like. These are 32 by 32 images, which take like half an hour maybe for one. Yeah, I did this one. Which takes a bit longer. Or these. And yeah. Maybe you know where these characters come from. Yeah, this is by far the largest one I ever did. Maybe you. You can get this as a poster at the info desk. I don't know if you saw it. But I printed a lot of these and put it there, and you can put in a donation and take a poster. Yeah, I created this after last year's Congress when I was in the post-Congress depression, right, and needed something to do and thought that this would be a good thing to do. And now I feel nostalgic because it's not there anymore on this stage. Yeah, well. So what all these graphics had in common was that if you do pixel art, you have really control at pixel level, right? If you place a single pixel, it makes a lot of difference compared to if you put it there or if you put it at the place next to that. Also, if you do pixel art, a lot of times you don't use automated tools like color gradients, for example, but you do everything by hand. And the last point is a little bit in the shadow of your head, sorry, you use a small color palette, right? Thanks. You can see these 4 colors. That's the Game Boy palette, right? Used in the original Game Boy, which had 4 levels of whiteness. And it's really, really common that you don't use many colors, but restrict yourself to a small palette, like at most 32 colors or so. Which is on the one hand tradition, because in the old hardware you didn't have the memory to store larger colors, but also it gives this particular style, which many people like. Right, and here is the reason why I really think pixel art is awesome. If you build a 16 by 16 image, for example, using a palette of like 32 colors. Then you can work on it for a while, and after some time you have thought about every single pixel of the image, and then you are really done with this. And that's something I never experience in the creative process, that you cannot improve it anymore. That's a really interesting feeling, in my opinion. Yeah. Here are some more associations which I always have when I think about pixel art. The first is cross-stitching, right? Sticken in Deutsch, which is nearly the same. So you have a small color palette, you do it in a square grid, and you build like high resolution, or rather low resolution images. So I think if you have some grandparents maybe which do stitching, you can talk to them and maybe learn a lot about the technique. And the second association is the board game Go. Does anyone of you know that board game? I see a few hands, that's cool. Because in that board game, if you put a single stone, it has a lot of local power, right? It has it changes a lot if this stone is there or not, and that's the same in pixel art for a single pixel in the image. Yeah, so I think if you like the board game Go, you will like pixel art and the other way around. That's why I mentioned it here. Yeah. So what we will do in the workshop phase is create some 16 by 16 pixel images, which really sounds like small space, right? But I have prepared a slide for you, which should give you some courage if you think about tweets. Like, this is the old tweet limit of 140 characters. If you build a tweet out of 95 possible ASCII characters, you can do 10 to the power of 277 different tweets. But if you do 16 by 16 pixel images using 32 colors, you can do a lot more. That is 10 to the power of 385. So you should be courageous that you can do a lot of different stuff in this small space. And here's some other encouragement. These characters are 8x8. And if you look around, maybe you can really recognize many of them. These are not by me. I will give you the credits in the slides, where I give the link to that later. But I think it's astonishing how the artist managed to build some recognizable figures in 8x8 pixels. Yeah. Okay, let's look at some techniques in pixel art. I mentioned these small color palettes. This is again the Game Boy palette. And the one on the right is a palette called DB16 that's by a person called Dawnbringer, who is active in a pixel art forum. And this person created a small palette which is really, you can do a lot with it. And the reason for that is, if you look at these are called color ramps, right? If you follow the color going to a different direction, you can do kind of gradients. And a good palette has the property that you have these color ramps and can go in different directions from it. So, yeah, this DB16 palette would be my recommendation if you try pixel art for the first time. If the colors which you have to your access are not enough, you can try a technique called dithering. And that's where you build a pattern between at the intersection of two different colors, like this, for example. And you can go in the other direction as well, like this, for example. This would be like a half tone in between the two colors. And if you want to go further out, you can try different patterns like this, for example. And this gives like a nice shadow gradient between those two colors. That's dithering. Another thing to look out for are clusters. Clusters are a topic when you want to do a line which is of one pixel width. You want to avoid these clusters of white pixels which are stuck together, because that doesn't look pretty. Instead, you want to have a situation where you have a formation of strokes which are like lines going in a, in a single direction, which are linked at the diagonal, right? So you would maybe do it like this. Yeah. And I don't know if you can recognize this from the back, maybe, but I think this line, if I can open a preview window, this line looks a lot sharper and better than this one. So, and at the bottom, I would maybe remove these pixels. So that's the general technique. If you want to do a single pixel line, you can first draw it by hand and it looks ugly maybe, and then you can put in a bit of effort and improve it like this. Yeah, something like that. Then you get a sharp line, which you can use as an outline of a shape, for example. So clusters are something you want to avoid. The second thing you want to avoid are called jaggies. Jaggies are like small irregularities in the line. So if you look at this line, for example, it's clear what you want to do, right? Here's it's like an irregularity in the line, which doesn't look pretty. And if you move all the white pixels one pixel up, it will be much better. That's a very simple case. In this case, where you have like a rounded corner, the problem that it looks a little crunky here is that the length of these segments are, first there's a very long segment, then it's a segment of length one, then it gets longer again, then you have a shorter one again, and then a longer. And generally what you want to do is a situation where the length of the segments decreases steadily, going to the middle, and then increases again. So if you compare it in the preview window, you will again have a much nicer, rounder corner than compared to the left version. And then the bottom case, again, maybe this single pixel is the problem, and then we can try something like this, where we again go from a long segment to shorter ones, then to a long again. Maybe do it like this. Yeah. So that's jaggies. And finally, anti-aliasing. You might have heard of this term if you ever opened your graphic settings of like computer games, for example, right? The term comes from, if you look at this diagonal line, in the pixel art grid, you can't do a perfect diagonal. And the effect is that different parts of the line, which should be at different heights, are at the same height because of the pixel grid. And these heights are aliases of another. So the effect is aliasing, and we want to counter this effect. So what you can do is you pick some colors which are between the line color and the background color. For example, this light gray. And then you extend these segments a bit to the sides. So like it fades out a bit. And again, in the preview, maybe you can see it. But I think it looks nicer already. It looks smoother. And you can continue it with an even darker color, which you put at the end. So normally, that's something which, for example, your graphics engine does for you. And if you do pixel art, you have to do it by yourself. So yeah, anti-aliasing. Maybe I will go to the second example. I mostly focus on the preview image and think about where are some sharp cuts in the line, for example, here and here. And then I put the lighter colors in there. This probably needs a bit of practice, but you will get the hang of it quickly. Yeah, that's already better, I think. Yeah, and you could fill it up with a darker gray, maybe here. Something like this, yeah. And at the bottom case, we have like a solid color and you want to have a smooth outline. Again, you would maybe fill up these little holes and... Yeah, maybe that's all you need. Yeah, anti-aliasing. I've gathered some resources which are useful, in my opinion. Pixel Giant is a forum. You don't need to write this down. I will give you the link to the slides. There's a Pixel Art subreddit, and there are two Twitter accounts. Pixel Dailies gives you a topic for each day, and then like maybe hundreds of people pixel something around this topic, which is fun in my opinion, and encouraging to look at others' work. You can learn a lot from that. And 8-bit phone like tweets out some nice pixel art images. Yeah. As for software, you can definitely use GIMP if you're used to that. You would create a brush which is 1x1 pixels large and like create a new small image and then pick a palette and pixel away. But I have a software recommendation which is Asprite. It's a graphics program really specialized on pixel art. It is unfortunately not open source anymore. When I prepared the first talk, it had just become, the maintainer had changed to a different license model where it's no longer allowed to distribute binaries, unfortunately. The source is still open, so you can still build it yourself. And the open source version, which is under GPL, you can still find in your software repositories, which is version 1.1.7. And that version is also still really good. So yeah, if you can find that, like for Debian systems, you can find a DB package for that version. And you can just use that or build it. And I think I have linked on the workshop page binaries for Windows, which some people have built and distributed. And you can use that. OK, and now for Asprite, I can show you a little bit about the workflow of using that. This will get challenging because I need to push keys with one hand and use the mouse with another, but I will try my best. I'm using Asprite as a presentation tool. you can do animations with this tool. So what I did was like these different slides are frames of an animation, and if we play it, we get some random stuff. I can just hide that. So if you create a new sprite, you would just go like a new file, pick 16 by 16 pixel size, and use the RGBA color mode. That's the easiest to begin with, in my opinion. Maybe a black background. Can you read the text? Because for me, it's rather blurry. I will read out the important text for you. And then you get a new image. The tools which you need are like the color palettes. You can find them on the left side. If you click on this icon here, you get some presets. And there's really a lot, like Commodore 64 colors, or the Game Boy palette, the small one, the Game Boy Color colors. And here's the DB16, which I mentioned. And there's also an extended version, the DB32. And that one I would probably recommend for today, if you use the DB32. It's a very versatile palette. You can do all kinds of stuff with it. Yeah. And I would recommend to stick to this palette. You can, of course, always pick different colors down here and use that. But if you stick to the palette, it will have a different style. OK, you will need the pencil tool, which is probably what you would expect. You pick a color, and you can draw with it. This pencil tool has a special option called the pixel perfect mode up here. And if you select that, you will get lines where Asprite tries to do like nice lines, like I explained, right? You don't get clusters like here, but all the segments are straight. You can also select a background color. You do this with the right mouse button. So if I pick this color as a background color, I can also use the right mouse button to paint with that. And then the left to paint with the foreground color. You see this little small triangle for the background color and the larger one for the foreground color. And this makes it easy to like work on shapes. If you maybe draw a little bit too much here, you can fix it again with your right mouse button. So yeah, that's probably everything you need to know about the pencil. There's the eyedropper tool, which you activate by holding down the Alt key. It switches to the eyedropper tool. And if you hold on the Alt key, you can click somewhere in the image and select that color. like you're probably used to from other graphics programs. There's the paint bucket tool, which is this one. If you hover over this button, you can also see the shortcut tools. In this case, it's G. And I would say that's where automation is something which you can use. You don't need to fill this color all by yourself, but you can just fill it white, or like for the background maybe or something. Yeah. And the last point is saving, which sounds a little bit funny, but if you want to save the pixel art image and tweet it, for example, there is, you might have seen this, Twitter converts many images to JPEG, right? And in that case, the color areas of one color get like JPEG artifacts and look blurry, and it's not really pretty. So what you would do if you save an image, let me just draw something, oops. Pretty image, right? And now if you want to save it in a format that you can show it to others, what I always do is I make the canvas a little bit larger. So that's under sprite canvas size. And then you can give it a border, like if we scale it to 64x64, then if you look at the image, it's not so much in your face, right? It doesn't look so pretty. But if you look at this from this distance, it's a little bit nicer. And then the trick for the Twitter JPEG conversion is that you select the eraser tool, set it to a really low strength, it's like opacity 1, and then you erase once in the top left pixel. And if you use that image, Twitter thinks, oh, this image contains transparency. I will just save it as a PNG instead. Yeah, that's one thing I had to learn, and I can recommend it. Yeah. And after that, you can go to File, Save Copy As. So normally, if you save it, it will be in the .ASE format, which is Acebrite's internal format, which contains all the layers and stuff. But you can also export it as a PNG by going Save Copy As, selecting PNG file, and then you can apply a resize factor. So if you go to a resize of 1000%, then each pixel in your original image will be 10 by 10 pixels in the resulting PNG. And then it looks more crisp and is larger if you show it to other people. Yeah, that's for saving. Right. Something about the creative process itself. So if you want to try this, you could think of like a favorite character of yours, or maybe a simple everyday object or something. And maybe you want to find a reference image. So you just do a Google search and look at how this thing or this character looks like, which proportions it has, which colors it has. And you can put this next to your Acebrite window and create a lower resolution version of it. Then I always do like a really quick rough version where I just lay down all the areas and stuff, and then I polish it so long until I'm happy with it. Yeah. I told you I've done this workshop a few times before, and here's some things I've learned, which is good to tell people beforehand. So if you look at the top example, there's really low contrast between the yellow minion and the white background color. And it's hard to recognize the shape, at least for me. And yeah, you want to look out for a good contrast between your motif and your background. In the second case, for symmetry, someone wanted to do a water droplet. And if you have a 16 by 16 image and want to do it symmetrically, you will always have the case that, like in the center, you have two of these which look the same, right? If you want to do a sharp edge, you have to like move it one pixel to the side. And if you imagine a 16 by 16 frame around it, it will have a little bit more space here, like on this side, for example. But that's okay, in my opinion. That's a trick to get sharper edges if you want to symmetrical stuff. This often happens if you do logos, for example. Yeah. Saturation. The difference between these images is that all colors in this image have full saturation. So, oh, you can see the... Wait. in ASRoid, there's a color picker tool here, and you can always select different colors. And if you, the more you go on the right, the more saturated the colors will be. So these are really strong colors which blow up in your face. And often it looks nicer to stay a little bit on this side and have desaturated colors, which are easier on the eyes. Yeah. If you stick to the palette, it will be all right anyway. Yeah. And the last point about shading, if you do flat areas, it will look all right. But if you imagine where the light comes from and put a little bit lighter color on the one side and a darker color on the other side, it will look a lot more 3D, right? So that's one trick I like to use to make it look better. Yeah. Do you have any questions up to this point? If that's not the case, we can start with the practical part if you want. I can come around and look over your shoulder if you want and give some comments and help you. I would recommend a 16 by 16 image first. You have at least an hour if you want to try this. And if you're done with your image and you're happy with it and want to share it, you can send it, for example, over Twitter at me to @blinry or use the 34C3 hashtag and pixel art, or you can send it at my mail address, for example, if you don't want to share it with the world. Yes, a question. Yeah. The question was, if someone didn't bring their laptop, do I recommend an Android app, right? I don't really have anything in mind, but you can just try one from your favorite app store, I guess, and try it out. No, I don't have much experience because I like to do it with the mouse most of the time. Yeah, sorry. Yep. Yeah. Okay, try it out for yourself. Thanks for staying around up to this point. Thanks for being here.